Do you love and hate the hospitality industry? Then you are in the right spot. Join your hosts, Kyle and Sarah, Sean Walsheth, and Jensen Cummings as they talk shop and give real insights into the latest restaurant news and most pressing issues facing hospitality professionals today. Welcome in to the Restaurant Idea Factory.
Welcome into Restaurant Idea Factory. That's Sean. That's Kyle. I'm Jensen. Today is Friday, March 10th. Look at our guy on location. All right, we got to give a shout out to Journey Real Estate. Move your head, Sean. Journey Real Estate. That's your guy, ex-business partner.
Nice sign placement.
Love the shout out. Sean is up in San Fran in the city at the restaurant, 365 Restaurant. RTT, what does that stand for?
Restaurant Transformation Tour.
Restaurant Transformation Tour. How is it?
Dude, it was incredible. They did a phenomenal job. I mean, we talk a lot of shit about trade shows on this show.
We do.
Help improve trade shows. We want to help improve the programming, the content. We want to meet people that listen to this show at the villages and the cities that we go to. This was an incredible opportunity. I mean, we have friends in our entire ecosystem, people that listen to this show that know you, that know Kyle. I mean, the closed Monday I had Restaurant 365 team. Yeah. Asking, what's that? What is that? Like, I had another owner going like, what does that mean? And like it just starts a conversation, my friend.
That's right.
Yeah. That's what, when you said it, I'm like, yeah.
Thing. In New Orleans, they don't have restaurants are closed on Monday. Did you know that?
It can't be open, right?
Oh, they got to hold everything down after the weekend.
Yeah, they need a day to recover.
Restaurant 365 did a phenomenal job. Talked to some incredible people and made some good connections out here.
That is awesome. Love hearing that. Kicking off this riff on the road for us too. So this is great. All right. Today is what? Riff 11. What are we talking about? We're talking about the 2023 state of hospitality staffing. Oof, we're talking about renewing liquor licenses that literally put a pit in my stomach, and restaurant legacy, something that I know Sean's thinking a lot about. We're also going to have a guest experience segment where we're talking about Doghouse branding. Doghouse is crushing it right now. And then on Emphasizing Teams, we're going to talk about flexible schedule, a little bit of a hot button item, flexible schedules. And I think super important for us to talk about today. But we're going to break up the getting to know the host piece. That's been like fire. So we're going to sprinkle it throughout the show. So people got to stay tuned in so they can learn a little bit more about these jabronis here. Sean, let's start with you. Let's kick it off. What is something we don't know about you? Let's keep that going.
What?
he's deaf in one ear. That's you. What you guys are.
No, what is something we don't know about you besides that you're deaf?
Besides that I'm deaf, I walked 100-mile Camino de Santiago in northern Spain with Corey. So, fitting Journey Real Estate. This is my guy that climbs castles and jumps into oceans. When we finished studying 6 months in Spain, we went to northern Spain and did the Camino de Santiago, 100 miles in northern Spain. So 20 miles a day. It's an incredible, incredible pilgrimage. Anybody that's read The Alchemist or knows about Paulo de Coelho, it's an incredible opportunity. Yes.
Very cool. Betsy's parents went on that some years back. I remember them talking about it.
Who?
Cool. Betsy's parents did. The in-laws. Really? Yeah. They went on that pilgrimage as well. Loved it. And said of all the places that they've been in the world, when we talked about your favorite cities, that Spain had the best food.
Oh, yes.
Of Italy, down. France, all of like Spain Fire had down. The food.
Yeah.
Not Italy, Kyle.
It was no, Spain. Not Italy. Spain, for sure. I'm down with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially they said
you can do a riff in Spain, Madrid.
Let's go.
Restaurant Idea Factory.
Our guy Donald Burns is there right now.
Burns coach. Is it at the Expo.
I saw that. Okay. Man, you are a world traveler. Kyle, we gotta go.
I don't talk about it. It was finally getting me to think about all the travels. So, yeah.
This is great. Kyle won't even go all the way up to Queens, man. He's like, nah, I won't even travel that far.
If I can't get there by subway, I'm not going.
See?
See?
Come on, you gotta go. Queens has got the diner scene on lock, man. Some of the best like Americana diners are in Queens.
Yeah. Tangent. No argument there. I'm a big fan of a big diner, except for a big menu diner. That's a different story. That could take up a whole show.
Just realized we're all rocking your gear. You got the Closed Monday. Let's see your hoodie.
Yes. Oh yeah.
Let's see it. Restaurant, real estate, restaurant, real estate. And then I got the
collab. Yeah, man, I don't even have that one.
Landlord lease location, the new three L's.
Wait, did you see the tag on that one?
I saw the tag. I didn't know you could brand the tag. We're talking about branding today. That was dope. My social media handle and Kyle's social media handle are on the tag area of this shirt. So that was, yeah, because why not?
ABB, always be branding.
Always be branding. All right, let's get the show started. I think we got a good one today. We're going to be all over the place and should be a lot of fun. So let's kick it over to Destiny.
Do you love and hate the hospitality industry? Then you are in the right spot. Join your hosts, Kyle and Sarah, Sean Walsheth, and Jensen Cummings as they talk shop and give real insights into the latest restaurant news and most pressing issues facing hospitality professionals today. Welcome in to the Restaurant Idea Factory.
Gets me fired up. All right. Yeah, intense, makes me feel rock and roll. All right, our first segment, our at-large segment today, we're hearing from InstaWork. InstaWork shared this report that they did on 2023 staffing. A lot of it was comparing 2022, 2023, where are people at. There was a solid uptick trajectory. At least people were feeling a little better about where they're at. So I was interested in that. So I'm going to pick this one up. Quote here, more than a quarter of respondents say they had to forego at least 10% of potential revenue because of a lack of staff. Among those, more than half offered pay increases of $3 an hour more to attract and retain staff. That to me is a big one. A lot of people have told me, they're like, okay, we've kind of equalized. We have enough staff for the shifts that we're running. I was like, wait a minute. The way that you said that makes me say, what are the shifts that you're running? Have you cut back? And so many people have said, we close Mondays. We're not doing lunch right now. We have scaled way back. So I think now I'm interested, are we trying to get to the levels of being open for full service, whatever that means for them, the number of services that they're doing? So wanted to just touch with you guys real quick. Have you guys heard that? Sean, I mean, did you have to deal with that at all? What do we think about not being able to be open as much because of staffing versus just even being able to staff the services that you are open?
See, I think for us, it's different. We don't, I guess I just hate hearing about the lack of staff because I don't believe it. I don't believe that there's a lack of staff. I believe there's a
lack of
staff.
Where do I find good people?
They're so annoying. It's just it's a tired conversation and it just seems like a lazy conversation. But what I do think is interesting is talking about the profitability and the revenue that you can make while you're open. And do you need to be open as many hours as we, like Corey and I, when we opened, we took over a breakfast concept that was open from 7 to 2. Our big brilliant idea was to open until 10 p.m. and add a liquor license. So 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. And then we actually extended it with the liquor license to go till midnight. So at one point, 365, it's no wonder he quit and got into real estate. Yes, 7 a.m. to 12 p.m., 365 days out of the year. I mean, I think we were probably open on Christmas and open on Thanksgiving at that time. And now our business, we're 12 p.m. to 8 p.m. We have an 8-hour service. And that's not because of lack of staff. That's because we're running a smarter business. You know, just because you can do it doesn't mean you should do it. Let's focus on the things that are going to actually drive revenue, increase profitability, and, you know, ultimately create a better environment for our team.
Yeah. So they had, and I think we got a graphic here, tactics to attract and retain staff in 2023. So let's pop that up and take a look. So here's what people are saying. Increase pay. 52% of restaurants are looking to increase pay. Offer a flexible schedule, which I know we're going to talk about again when we get into 7 shifts, emphasizing team schedule, 38%. Provide training, 34%. Give rewards, 26%. Offer new benefits, 20% of restaurants. And give title promotions, 18% of restaurants said this. This is thesis for me. If you're not as creative in the way that you're trying to attract and retain employees as you are, the way you're trying to attract and retain customers, then the labor shortage, it's on you.
Yeah.
Like finding good people, I can't stand that fucking question.
How many humans are on Earth? How many humans are on Earth?
7 billion, yada, 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 yada.
Fill 2 spots? Yeah. That's a you problem.
100%.
Yeah, so, I'll tell you though, one of the biggest lessons I learned in a restaurant, we had a girl who worked lunch and she would crush it. And we wanted to offer her dinner, but there was no place to put her. Then it became available and she was just like, I don't want it. I like working days. You know, I was like, well, you know, try to, you know, it's more money. And she's like, it's not about the money. I want to have more time. So I think those conversations are important. Like, I think line cooks, you know, general money, probably going to get it done. But some people have different needs. You got to get to know what each of your employees wants or what they value the most to get a real idea.
Yeah. And the ability to be able to have those conversations. We've been talking about the feedback loops, especially with Jordan at Seven Shifts, quite a bit of like how we ask better questions internally. Right. Because we know you ask a guest, can questions get canned answered? How is everything? Everything is fine. We do the same thing with our staff and we wonder why we don't understand what their actual needs are. We romanticize our own needs. And look, I used to glorify the fact that I lived with four guys that worked at the restaurant. We ate fucking top ramen every day because we were like hard and we were tough and we worked hard and played hard. And the reality is like, that's just stupid. People don't want that life. I don't want people who work at a restaurant to feel lucky to be able to put a fried egg on their top ramen, because people who serve food are some of the most, you know, had the most food scarcity of anybody around. So like, I absolutely think that pay is important, but once you get people out of fight or flight, once they have that living wage, then they want the things that are fulfilling to them. Then they want to be a part of something that has purpose and they have a team and they have the benefits and they don't have to worry about, are they going to be able to afford to buy their dog food or be able to go to the dentist for themselves? And those are the decisions that a lot of people are making. So, yeah, I appreciate InstaWork for sharing this. Shout out to them for putting the effort to kind of try and understand a little bit deeper on what we're talking about, because everyone's like, well, we're paying more and we offer benefits. So often I hear that. It's like, I can just tell the tone while you're saying that you're doing that obligatorily, that's not actually what you believe in. And your staff feels that. A person in an interview feels that when you tell them that you're going to pay $18 an hour grinding through your teeth, they don't trust you and believe you, even though you may be paying that dollar amount. So,
or if you put it in their face, like, hey, I pay for your benefits.
Yeah.
Like if you offered it, then that's it. Just leave it there. You're supposed to.
Right. Like you're doing them this great service.
Yeah.
Just because we never had it before doesn't mean now that we have it, all of a sudden we are this employer of choice. It's going to take a lot of work. So thanks to InstaWork for that. All right, let's get into Davo segment here. We're going to talk about sleep at night. We launched this last week with David Joseph, which was really great. Really, we're going to be talking a little bit about sales tax specifically over the next few weeks, because that is what problem Davo solves. However, sleep at night is all about, there's just so many things that are churning, that are constantly on fire in a business, and your ability to be able to sleep at night because you have the solutions to solve those problems is really what we're going to talk about. So I appreciate David being part of that. So let's hear what David Joseph, founder, has to say.
I used to have this sheet hanging on the wall in my office, and it had the merchant's brain. And one side was emotional, and one side was logical. And the logical side of the brain says, put the money aside every day. Just do this. The emotional side of the brain says, you know what? I'll get it paid next week. And then you write the check and it's a dagger in your chest because you said, oh God, I just wrote a check to the state bigger than my paycheck. And what did I, it was the biggest check I wrote every month. And what did I get? I didn't get more product. I didn't get more customers. I didn't get another employee. I got nothing. And you start to look at yourself and you go, God, I just suck at this. And if you're in a state where you have to renew your liquor license, and in order to renew the liquor license, you have to pay the sales tax. And, you know, I had a customer, he said to me, I would walk into the office in the sales tax office with my head hung in shame to pay sales tax so I can walk across the hall to renew my liquor license. I always tell people, my mea culpa is I suck at sales. I just suck at tax. I suck at it. But I'm not alone. We all do.
Oof. I can see us in the background and all three of us And real quick, shout out Sophie Breaker. Anybody who follows Best Served knows Sophie Breaker, who's been running this show since May 2020. Everything that we do on Best Served is now show running for Riff. We're excited to have her. It means I'm hands free and I can't skip a segment or push the wrong buttons. So grateful to have Sophie here. Shout out to Sophie for pushing all those.
Sophie should pop on one more time. Do that quick pop on one more time.
Yeah, come on, Sophie. Quick, real quick. there's Sophie. Sophie Breaker. She's in Colorado Springs. Just got back from a month in Boston.
I was trying to hear that.
Love Boston.
Said she loved it.
So close to New York. I mean, what's the point?
Why not get all the way to New York?
What's that?
You got a problem with Boston?
Yeah, big one.
Boston just hijacks the Dabo. What are we talking about? Sales tax? Renewing liquor license? Do you have to renew a liquor license in Massachusetts?
I don't think you need a liquor license in Massachusetts.
Kyle, I want to have you specifically address some of what he's talking about, and then we alluded to it last week that you, all of us, have really personal issues when it comes to sales tax. You specifically have dealt with that and cost you a lot of money. But when you're thinking about that experience of having to renew the liquor license, having to go through that process, being like, I suck at this, what is that all about? What's the point that David's trying to make there?
Dude, I think that it's one of those things where this has been in restaurant owners' mind, like, I got to take care of everything. I don't need an accountant or a bookkeeper to take care of the sales tax thing. That's the mistake that we made. Like, we could take care of this. There was a guy who was an accountant who was a guest. He's like, I'll do your books for you. We just kind of gave him free food.
The dude sitting in the corner of the bar was doing your taxes.
Exactly. And so turns out that's not a great interview process.
That's not a good business strategy.
Don't ask the guy chugging beers eating pizza if he's a good accountant. But yeah, it's a definite no. Just if you see that guy, just be like, that's not my accountant. Unless you're a good accountant, just having a beer. Yeah. I don't want to like shame every accountant who's maybe right now having some pizza and a beer, but this one in particular didn't pay our sales tax and left us with a bill of $185,000. So
say that
shout
again.
Out to him. What's that?
Say that number again.
$185,000.
How much?
$100. You just want me to bleed out of the eyes? Is that what you want me to do? $185,000.
How many years did this accumulate?
One.
Oh.
But this is not, dude, just so you know, you get hammered with estimated sales tax.
Yep.
You get hammered with penalties that are like triple the amount that's due, and then you get interest, retroactive interest.
The VIG's running.
And I don't think anybody has mentioned this too. It's the one thing, at least in New York, I don't know if it's a federal thing in New York, it's the one thing that pierces the corporate veil. They can come after your personal assets for sales tax.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So
through an LLC they can?
Yep. It's the one thing that pierces the corporate veil. You don't believe me. I see that distrust.
This makes me really uncomfortable is what it makes me.
Yeah. It's scary.
Damn.
Do you have to go? Do you have to run right now?
Yeah. I can't continue this show.
He's off to Spain.
I'm like sweating right now. I just have so much PTSD right now of like these experiences. And you just feel so dumb. Like it's statute this, and they're like, you know, 1237B, and you're like, what? Come on, you know, and they lord it over you in this way, and there's just nothing you can do, and you feel helpless. It's like quicksand. Man, the 185.
Yeah.
I was going to tell my story next. I'm not even going to tell my story. This is bad. I can't follow dude, that. That's just,
it was,
how did you get out of that? What ended up happening?
We had to take some money from our investor and give up more equity, which sucked. So we were, I think, 45 and 45, and then 10% to him. I think we all went to a third after he had to put more money in for the sales tax.
So you're playing from behind. Like,
totally.
You can't catch up from that.
No. Can't. It's next to impossible. Yeah. There's no bid. We negotiated it down to, I think it was like 216.
No, come on. You know, yeah, if I can find down to 185.
I bet it's somewhere on my Google Drive if I really look for it. Yeah, if you people, you want if
if this needs to be like a Gary V where he shows his report card from like the seventh grade. We need to see this. Redact whatever you need to redact. This is something I know we're hovering on this. People are like, yeah, I get it. It sucks. But I don't think you get it unless you've been there.
We don't want it to happen to you.
Running that business.
Yeah.
Like, we've already had the problem. Don't let it happen to you.
And it makes me mad when I hear this. And then I'm like, Davo could have sold this for $49 a month.
Oh.
What were all these companies doing for us in 2007, 2010, when we were, you know, venturing out, trying to be restaurateurs?
Yeah. I mean, brutal. It's a no-brainer for me. I mean, forget about sleep, man. You're not making money. It becomes a real mess, man.
Yeah. And that liquor license process, it makes me think of excise and license all the times I've been in that office in Denver. And it's such a, you have to go here, take a ticket, wait forever to go tell this person this, give them that document, but you had the wrong document, so you got to get this other document. You have to have that document before you can get the other document from the other office that's around the corner, but then you have to pay them before you can get that document. And it's just this rat race, and you're just running around this office, and the next thing you know, you've been there for 4.5-5 hours, you still don't have a resolution, and then you go back to your restaurant. I've done this. Go back to the restaurant. And I was just a piece of shit. Like, I was angry. You know, that service probably sucks. I guarantee you somebody that day made up their mind, like, I don't want to work here. Like, there's all of these downstream effects of the impact of going through that grinder of the process of paying sales tax or anything that has to do with the bureaucracy of running the, what Sean, you know, talked about, the unsexy side of the business. Man.
Yeah.
This is like therapy right now, guys.
Yeah, let it out.
Yeah. Should have just closed Mondays. Then, you know, everything would have been okay.
Hindsight.
I thought we were cool that we didn't have lunch on Saturday and Sunday. I'm like,
yeah,
taking it easy.
I can't find the sales tax paperwork, but I do. I'm looking at right now the loan from the partner of $142,000 that decreased our equity. That's digital receipt right there.
Yeah, get that receipt.
And the most annoying thing is,
was it an investment or a loan?
No, it was cash money. It was equity in exchange for equity. So he, like, that whole thing, it sounds awful, but there literally was no way out because we were only 40 seats and we had a line around the block. So it doesn't matter. You can't get bigger. There's only so much catering you can do from a 500 square foot kitchen. Yeah. It was, yeah, real hell.
And then you start making decisions like, okay, well, let's reduce quality or let's raise prices or all of these different things. And look, I think every restaurant needs to raise their prices 25% and stop deploying tipping long term, right? We've talked about that. But in the short term, if you make those transactional decisions in a way that's coming from a place of scarcity, not a place of a sound business model,
mm-hmm.
that's a race to the bottom.
Oh.
We see that time and time again, and you're just not bringing value on any side of that equation.
I'll say one last thing about this. Do you know how we started to pay it back? We didn't get paid for a year.
Yeah, that's
my partner. We didn't get paid for 1 year.
Yeah,
that's how we paid it back.
That's a lot longer, but I've gone 3 and 4 month stints for sure, where you're like in that boat. Oh man, that's why Corey's got Journey Real Estate now.
We need Zach. Can Zach come on here and brighten this up a little bit? This is water, I swear.
I know. We're going to have another downer of an episode. Wait, what is next? Yes, Ovation segment is next. Let's get into Ovation. Let's get into guest experience. I was excited when I saw this. He's at Mertec right now, multi-unit restaurant technology something conference in Vegas. And so he was burning the midnight oil. I think he got us the clip last night at like 10 or 11 o'clock. So Corey was, I think, overnight getting this clip together. And yeah, he had just had Doghouse. So let's emphasizing teams. Let's get into that. And emphasizing teams is presented by Ovation. Ovation is a 2-question platform for real-time feedback, better online reviews, and happier guests. And well, Zach always makes us happy. Let's hear what Zach has to say.
What's up, Restaurant Idea Factory? Let's talk about a brand that I love, dog house. I mean, I had them for dinner tonight and they have just nailed it. They've nailed the food, the voice, the branding. They show that they care. I mean, just look at this packaging. They've got these little inserts right here so the hot dog doesn't slide out. On the top, they've got this playful text, the absolute worst. On the side, it says, "We love wieners." I mean, this thing, even on the bottom, it says mandatory legal jargon, doghouse, you know, copyright 2017. This thing just shows that they have put so much thought into the details and people love it. I love it because it's authentic. People want authenticity. So the question is, how do you instill true authenticity into your brand? Now, my tip is, man, just be yourself. I'm sure you're lovable. And look, if you're not, just pretend you're Sean Walchef. But what do you guys think?
I'm going to take this one because I pretend like I'm Sean Walchef every single day. Look at that. He gets us fired up every time. Here's where you start. TYBS, tell your best story. All right. We continuously self-commoditize ourselves in restaurants. I did this. I was guilty of this. The chef mindset. Just focus on the food and everything else will take care of itself. And what we just talked about, clearly that's not true. It's never actually been true. And it's definitely not true in any way, shape, or form today. You have to tell a meaningful story. You have to separate yourself. The food is just the proof that you are who you say you are. So tell us who you are. If you're the absolute worst, that can be lovable. If you love wieners, tell me about it. I think it's important for us to do that. And if you do that at every level of your brand, then people feel like they understand you no matter how, where, or when they interact with you. So when you have that packaging, all of that makes sense. Because if you've ever seen Doghouse online, you've ever been to a store, you've ever had that packaging, it feels authentic, that buzzword, throughout the entire experience. And everything seems on brand, on message. It's not convoluted. It's not confusing. It's not all over the place. It's very clear and focused. And they're telling their story. And their story is better than most because most are just saying, I'm just trying to grind through the day and get enough food out so that I can pay myself this year. So that's where I usually start. TYBS, tell your best story. Stop commoditizing your product because somebody else has a better burger. You might have a better story and that can make you an incredibly successful brand. What do you guys think?
I'm a huge fan of Doghouse. I was able to interview Andre Vanier, their CEO, last year, actually at MuirTech, so the multi-unit technology conference. I looked at everybody that was going to be there, and the two people I picked was Doghouse with Andre and then Stratus Morfogen from Brooklyn Dumpling Shop. And both solid of those lineup. Brands,
Brooklyn.
They speak to you. I've been to Doghouse. I haven't been to Brooklyn Dumpling Shop, but Doghouse, what they do and what Zach's talking about is the Apple experience. I mean, the unboxing of an iPhone, it's gotten down to a science. It's a science and it's an art. And how do we do that in food? Well, we need to pay attention to the details and the details matter. And what Doghouse is done with that packaging makes me literally want to get back to San Diego and go get a Doghouse to see the entire plethora of branding, because we're doing the same exercise at Cali Barbecue. We want to make the barbecue unboxing experience sexy so that somebody is compelled to make a video about it and post it on TikTok or post it on Instagram or make a YouTube video about it because it speaks to them. It maintains the quality, but it also tells the story. So great job, Doghouse brand. And thank you, Zach, for bringing it to our attention.
I mean, who keeps the box of the food that they just ordered? Like, you have to be incredibly compelled and moved by that piece of paper to do something like that. And I think that's valuable and important.
Wow,
that could be more important than the dog itself. Now, the food has to be fire. When I said the food, food's the proof that you are who you say you are, yes. And the food needs to be fire. That's the cost and barrier to entry. Everything else is the business model, right? So, yeah. Have you been to Brooklyn Dumpling Shop, Kyle?
Yeah, we went to Stratus was on my show twice, but he was very opinionated during COVID. That's pretty entertaining.
Stratus is opinionated? Says who? His book is called Be a Disruptor.
Yeah, he almost got into a fist fight with the governor.
He kicked out Tupac and Madonna from his nightclub.
Yeah.
He's like, you guys can't come in because of the dress code. This guy is phenomenal.
Dude, he chased the mafia away from his restaurant.
Yeah, he's fucking fantastic.
But yeah, we actually went down there with Steve from Ate It, and we did like a little thing and
Ate It app.
What's that?
Ate It app? Is that
you yeah.
Saying? Yeah.
And back then, you know, it was just getting started, but everything in there is branded. Every single little sauce, you get the little duck sauce, every little touch point is branded. And I could see he's doing the exact same thing with the new spot that he's opening up in the city. It's a Greek, it's like a homage to his grandfather, like one of the first Greek restaurants in the city. He rebuilt it. But I can see the same machine going for that, which is really cool. But you know whose branding I love and whose packaging I love? I don't know if you guys have them out by you. And Pizza? No. Oh, yeah. Check out their website. No. Each one of the their stores. Yeah.
Taverna. The original Papa's Taverna is Stratus's new spot.
Yeah. And Pizza, they have an interesting approach to their branding, and when you look at it, you'll see what I'm saying. They don't have any one look in each restaurant. They're different.
Yeah, and it still feels on brand.
Yeah, because you'll see when you check out their website, you'll get a vibe who they are. And like the ampersand.
Or the an ampersand restaurant?
An ampersand pizza.
That's one of those.
Do you know how many ampersand brands can you name?
One.
All of them.
All of salt and pepper, ketchup, and mustard.
Oh, 42,000. I think about
salt and pepper, the brand, the two girls, the hip hop group.
I saw one that was like and it was like every variation of and, the word and, ampersand, and wow. Like all of it. That was just the name of the potential brand. I'm pretty sure that was on the Onion or something like that. But yeah, that level of branding. I like what you just mentioned, where each store is different. I remember when we opened up Slotted Spoon. This was a shared vision. It's something I talk about with partners. Some of the best guys I've ever worked with, but we had very different visions, and that ended up ultimately we parted ways as partners. And they wanted to be Chipotle at store 1, and I wanted to be Chipotle at store 8. Mm. And so a lot of it was like too clean, where people would walk in and be like, is this a chain? I was like, shit. Like that to me was a mistake, a vulnerability, because it didn't speak to the essence of its location. And that's something that I wanted. Like, how can the branding be unique to that location, but still be very on brand throughout people's experience? So I'm going to check them out for sure. Kyle's throwing up the link. I'm going to check it out.
It's pretty wild.
Location 36. So they have at least 36 locations.
Oh, dude. They have several locations.
I think it's important to have that level of branding too in the pizza space, because there's a lot of white noise, especially if you're talking about the East Coast. All right, this is good. Well, let's stay with East Coast vibe. Get to know the host, Kyle. Kyle and Sarah, tell us something we don't know about you.
Sarah's not here, but I'll talk for me. What you don't know about me? Let's see. I was in New York City on 9/11. I know that's a downer topic, but that's a fact. That was pretty brutal.
Yeah.
I'll try to give you another upbeat one. Damn. But some of these things that you don't know are like, I don't have any weird things. Like, oh, you know what? I'm a Chinese checkers like master.
What?
Yeah. Yep.
I can't even remember how to play Chinese checkers.
Chinese checkers.
Yep.
Now I'm gonna up my game, and we're gonna have to play.
Where did you learn how to play Chinese checkers?
China.
No, you didn't. When were you in China?
From my mother-in-law.
Your mother-in-law.
Yeah.
She's a Chinese checkers master. Is she better than you?
She was. Oh, Chinese checkers master.
Really?
There's always a game that families play together.
What's that?
Who do you play Chinese checkers with now?
Her and Leslie.
So do you now just play with Leslie?
No, we all play, but you know, sometimes you get, you know, when you're as skilled as me,
who's
you
more competitive?
There's not a lot of players around, so I got to keep the limited players.
Chinese checkers has not had its heyday.
It's on yet, it's come up.
Resurgence.
It's on, you know, it's that it's on that.
Al's bringing it back.
I'm bringing it back.
Bring it back, man.
Yep, bringing back Chinese checkers and what are those things called?
I don't even know if I've ever played Chinese checkers.
And like fidget
twice in my life.
Spinner, there you go.
I'll bring back fidget spinners and fidget Chinese spinner?
We made some branded Cali BBQ fidget spinners.
This is from CoStar, the company that does like real estate site selection, because this is what it's like to be on CoStar. It doesn't work. You're like waiting.
It's waiting. Spinning wheel, nothing but the spinning hourglass, huh?
If anybody wants some Chinese checkers action, at me.
Now I want to. Now I want to learn, and we got to play in Chicago when we're at the National.
It's a tough game to travel with because there's like 800 little glass.
So many pieces.
Yeah.
Every family has that game you play. When I was a kid, it was charades. Our family played charades. That was
the
game.
Oh, really?
That's good. Oh, yeah. That was the game. We have a lot of big personalities and theatrical types in our family, you know. So,
oh boy.
That was the game we played. What about you, Sean? What's the family? What's the Walshaf family game?
Tennis. We played tennis together.
These guys at the opera. He's playing tennis. I got the wrong.
I was raised by a Bulgarian and a Japanese grandmother. What do you want from me? I'm very non-traditional.
Well, you guys saw the picture of my bacha. You should see her playing charades.
Yeah.
Boss. Hilarious. It's perfect because her English, you know, wasn't great. So she's just acting out scenes. She's, you know, demure, tiny little Japanese lady who stands up super, super slow. It's like Yoda. And then all of a sudden, she's just like busting out wild. It's the funniest thing you've ever seen. Now I got to find some footage. There's got to be some footage of that. Need some
footage of Chinese checkers.
That is awesome. All right. Let's get into this next segment. Let's talk about emphasizing teams presented by 7Shifts. 7Shifts helps restaurateurs with hiring, scheduling, paying, and retaining their people. We see that theme playing out today quite a bit, and I know flexible schedules is in on this, so let's hear what Jordan has to say.
We surveyed nearly 4,000 restaurant workers, asking them what was affecting their satisfaction in the restaurant workplace the most. Scheduling was ranked as one of the top three callouts overall, but not in a good way. Flexibility is high on the list as one of the best parts about working in the industry, but lack of flexibility was one of the top three reasons why employees quit. So to address this, operators need to make the unpredictable as predictable as possible. So how can operators think about flexibility and the positives that contribute to it? Well, I think about groups like Andalini's in Tulsa, who heavily leans into this concept called scheduling with empathy. They've created clear lines of communication to managers, define the guidelines for their team with submitting availability, time off requests, and a commitment to posting schedules 14 days ahead of time. And the results? They've seen amazing, amazing outcomes with an attrition rate that is well under the industry norm. So flexible scheduling can be a positive when operators do it right. If you want a team that shows up for each other and your guests, you've got to match their flexibility needs with the business needs and communicate that in a timely manner. Predictive scheduling legislation is becoming more common, and there's a number of ways that operators can lean into this with their teams. And it's a huge part of making sure the team gets the schedule with enough notice to plan their lives around it. For many, that's a couple weeks, and that timeline is completely doable when you have the right tech in place to help you predict better as it relates to building schedules, tracking time off requests, and handling shifts.
Okay. Flexible schedules. We saw that on InstaWork, that was the number two element that people are looking for beyond pay, that restaurants are initiating. Flexible schedule. Sean, I want to get your insight on this. And one thing I want to just throw in the mix is flexible schedule. What he said, I thought was the key, was 14 days ahead of time. That commitment, that was really powerful and unique, because some of the bills that are coming out, including HB 23, 1118, which just got knocked down here in Colorado, was trying to push that, because a lot of flexible schedule was a little bit of a red flag that people were like, well, flexible schedule means it's going to come out the day before you actually have to work, that the flexibility was on the wrong side of the equation. So I'm interested in that, because flexible has become a little bit of a red herring buzzword. So just wanted to get your thoughts on that, Sean.
Yeah, I think flexible schedule, I mean, to be honest, thinking back in our scheduling journey of 15 years running the restaurant, you know, before, I honestly don't even remember what I'd have to ask Corey how,
what we call him in the office. Corey, get in here.
Corey.
Let's go.
Hey, Corey. Corey.
Special guest.
You're on the show.
Yes.
A guest onto the show.
This is the greatest show we're ever going to do.
In the restaurant. Corey actually used to do the scheduling. Go ahead.
Oh, it's so fun.
What did we do?
What do we have, an Excel spreadsheet, I think?
That's what you did, right?
Juggle it around, and people would handwrite in their vacation schedules and requests, and you'd have less talented people wanting to trade with more talented people on busy Sunday football mornings, which is awesome. So yeah, and then a lot of times people would bail, and so I would be on the floor tending the power. It was a lot of fun. I miss it.
So only Corey had to be flexible in a flexible schedule.
Corey was the flexible in the flexible scheduling.
I was the flex. Yeah,
Corey was the Cordell Stewart of our restaurant operations.
Oh my God!
Pathways in the real estate business.
Yeah, I was just gonna say.
I mean, to be honest with you, it's like understanding what Corey went through and then us switching to hot schedules, you know, what I consider web 1.0 technology. And then now moving to seven shifts is why we believe in digital hospitality. It gives us as operators and our team the tools that we need to understand life happens. It's literally what Jordan said. The reason why so many people choose this business is because they can, you know, maybe they want to work in the daytime. And like Kyle said, that he had a server that didn't want to work at nighttime. She didn't care about making more money. She wanted to work in the daytime. We have moms that their kids go to school and they want to work the lunch shift and they do not want to be in the dinner shift. Yeah. But having technology like Seven Shifts literally allows us to be proactive. And, you know, just from this conversation, I'm going to go back to our manager meeting next week and say, where are we at the 2-week schedule? Because I know that was a priority for Eric and for Lisa scheduling now of like, how do we get to a 2-week schedule? The more that we can allow people, hey, I'm going to have a dentist appointment or I'm going to go on vacation, like put those schedule requests in, the easier that we make it. When you have technology that makes it easy, now all of a sudden it isn't reactive scheduling, like, hey, I'm not coming in for my shift because you didn't listen to me, manager, that I told you I have a dentist appointment for my kid. It's proactive, like just literally go on the app and tell us ahead of time, don't schedule me on this day and day because I'm taking my kid to the dentist appointment.
Corey's getting pissed over here going, why the hell didn't we have all of that?
What's that?
I was doing the schedule.
Corey's doing the schedule.
I think it's best just to text Sean with any text request.
that's the running joke is text the general manager whatever your request is.
Thanks, Corey.
Yeah. Enjoy, guys.
Thank you. There you go.
The 2-week lead time schedule allows people to plan their lives around their lives, I think is important. And it's flipping that you're not just, okay, well, it's Thursday, schedule's still not out for next week.
The worst.
I'm working Friday, then Saturday, I'm going to find out if I'm working Monday. And it's just, you can't plan anything that way. So.
And dude, what about like, even with seven shifts, it also takes it out of your hands. They can trade their shifts. And you just get like an alert to approve, right? Like, hey, Jen's going to pick up my shift. And you're like, yeah, all right, cool. I'll send it to you. You click yes. It goes to the manager. They say yes. Boom. It's amazing. That is.
Corey did mention a vulnerability of that where there's certain criteria for somebody's at a certain level.
Right. Yeah, right.
You know,
right.
You have a cook one or a cook five, or do you have the same kind of thing as far as skill set potentially goes?
Like the bar back can't cover the bartender.
Right. Yeah. So I think there's a little bit of proactive management, but Andolini's, I love that. I've heard of them. I know them. I think they're, you know, somebody that
Mike Bosch was on my show. He's amazing. Right. They do incredible work. Yeah. Mike's really, really good and such a strong brand and what they do. I mean, I think they just cooked like the world's largest single pizza stadium in Oklahoma, and they raised a bunch of money doing it. It was really cool.
Yeah, I saw that. It was like a football field long on a table, right?
Yeah.
It was nuts. Well, yeah, scheduling with empathy. I think if that's a core value of the way that you approach scheduling, that's flipping the dynamic. That's flipping the narrative from what the expectation was, is you're just waiting around to see if you got X, Y, Z shifts. There was the flexibility was like, you better be flexible because I don't know when the hell I'm going to schedule you. So we really need to understand that flexible, that's supposed to be in support of the staff, not the person making the schedule. So just understand that dynamic, I think, is important. So, all right, that was a great segment. Let's get into our next Marquee. We're going to be talking about reading reviews presented by Marquee. Marquee is a one-stop digital operations platform for no-touch digital menu and listing updates. And really appreciating Avi has really dived in the conversation. He's been talking about what we talked about last week, a little bit of that, more of that's happening, and just talking to Kelsey and him as well. They really appreciate being a part of the narrative. So loved hearing that from Avi from Marquee. I think we're all going down there to Austin to get Chilean food, right? Or is he bringing some to Chicago?
We're going to Austin. I'm going to Austin for sure, and figure out how to get the Riff team there.
I want this Chilean food he was talking about last week. So, all right, let's hear from Avi.
The marquee team was at the New York Restaurant Show this week, and we got to hear a great restaurant marketing panel hosted by our good friend Rev from Handcraft Burgers and Brews. Go check them out near Bryant Park. And on the panel was Jenny from Eat, Drink, and Be Merry. Eat, Drink, and Be Merry has some of my favorite concepts in New York City, from Hair of the Dog, which used to have $5 You Call It's on Tuesdays, very dangerous and fun for after work happy hours, to Off the Wagon, which I've been going to since I was probably 19. But more importantly, they have a bar in the Village called Down the Hatch. Let's look at some of their reviews, because they're a really special place. First review: my husband and I met at Down the Hatch 27 years ago, and tonight we brought our oldest child, our hatchling, to celebrate his 21st birthday. Gabe and the entire staff were a reminder of how awesome the Hatch was and will always be. Love to hear your thoughts on that, Riff team. And then the second, this review is from a young woman who was too drunk to be let in. We've all been there. But they were so nice to her that she felt compelled to leave a positive review anyway. She finishes her epic review story with: the hospitality, service, and just kindness that I experienced when I went to pick up my phone was above and beyond. Huge thank you to the bouncer, the homeless man, Kayla, Maura, and Lucas for just being all around good people. Next time I visit New York, I know where I am going.
That gave me all the feels. How good was that? You get a great review from somebody who didn't even get in the building. You're fucking crushing hospitality.
I saw the marquee team over there in New York at the show, and they were getting a lot of people's attention with what they do. And I also learned that Avi is from Long Island, which is where I'm from.
Oh,
they talk about Long Island Railroad, all this stuff. All their tags said Long Beach, but they're like, no, I don't live in Long Beach. I live in, you know, wherever they were from. So, they even gave Sean a little shout out while I was there. I sent you that video.
That was a good video. I like that video.
Sean loves getting those shout outs, those digital shout outs. Come on.
Video. For sure.
True hospitality there. And then, Sean, I want you to pick this one up as well and run with it, because that restaurant legacy, right? When you're talking about 2008, that's your origin story. And now 27 years ago, they met their kid. They're taking their kid there. And I think all of us as parents, like, that's the kind of stuff I'm like, wow, that's legacy. That means something. And it's really hard to have that kind of staying power. So talk about that a little bit. Hair of the Dog, by the way, awesome, awesome spot. If nobody's ever been.
Well, first of all, thank you to Avi for bringing out Eat, Drink, and Be Merry. I'm not familiar with the concept. I haven't been to New York enough, but I guarantee you I will be going to their concepts because of stories like that. I mean, when I think of legacy and I think of, you know, a video that I just made recently with my wife, we were outside of Cali Barbecue and we were with my uncle, who's essentially a second cousin, but he immigrated to the United States in 1994, the year that we opened up the breakfast concept. So the year that I, at 12 years old, started bussing tables at the restaurant that I now own, my grandfather and my uncle, my second cousin, planted an orange tree at the front of the restaurant. So this orange tree has been there literally since 1994. And as we were turning our restaurant into the Master Smokehouse, Keith and Eric and myself and Howard were talking about construction and like, how are we going to get the catering van to back up to the smokers to load in all the meats? Well, we got to get rid of the orange tree. And my wife, Rositza, was like, absolutely no chance are you going to get rid of the orange tree. And she fought tooth and nail and literally figured out a way to keep the orange tree in front of the restaurant. And now we have a beautiful smokehouse, but we have a tree. And Simeon and my wife and myself were in front of the tree, and like, it looks amazing. It would, without the tree, it wouldn't look cool. But what's even cooler about the tree is that it's a generational tree. And you know, why we get into this business is exactly for the story that Avi talked about. It's not about a transaction. It's about bringing, we met in this bar, and then now we're bringing our kids into the bar. That's what happens in our restaurant. Stacy Poonkinney, who owns the Trails Eatery, she met her husband. She literally worked in our restaurant before we took over it. Like that restaurant was a restaurant for 20 years before we took it over it. She met her husband working in our restaurant. And like now it's still there. She brings her kids there. It's absolutely incredible. And, you know, I love stories like that. That's why we do what we do. I mean, those are the stories that go above and beyond. And when people take the time to write the review and say something like that, that's it's powerful, because when I come to New York, I'm coming to those locations.
Those locations are such icons. Like down the hatch, or did you say off the wagon or down the hatch? I forget. I get confused. There are two. They're both like they're all so synonymous.
Off the wagon is the one he mentioned, and Hair of the Dog.
Oh, those are the names of the restaurants. I thought you were just talking shit.
No, those are great names.
I'm pretty sure off the wagon, like your hands can touch either side of the place.
Oh yeah, it's tiny.
It's like a shoebox, like a half a shoebox, right?
Yeah.
It's most like that of the time long, that I was skinny. At off the wagon though was not, you know, wasn't very clear headed. So that's what I recall of it anyway. I couldn't step foot in there now. So,
on this segment, I think we just promoted underage working and drinking. I think Avi said he was 19 when he went there. Sean's talking about being 12 years old, bussing tables.
Zach wanted authenticity.
The Restaurant Idea Factory do not condone any illegal activities when it comes to labor force or to underage drinking.
That's 100%. That's part of the legacy.
Well, if you're an immigrant family, you can talk about labor laws all you want, or you can just sleep outside.
And you can talk about drinking age too.
Be honest about it.
I just had Penelope Wong of You on Wonton, who shout out to her and her team. They just got a James Beard nomination out of a food truck, then just turned into a restaurant. So I think James Beard is going, wait a minute, that fire food. And she is very outspoken on what it takes and the struggles and all that. And anyway, mentioned she grew up in the restaurant business. Her family had a restaurant, and, you know, doing homework in the corner table and then helping bus tables or doing those pieces. Like that is a very American story.
Yeah,
for sure. So something to that. All right. Next. Now you got to hear a little bit about me. Sorry, everybody. But something that you guys don't know about me, huge movie buff, big time into movies. A cinephile, I think. Sounds creepy. My family growing up in Southern California, LA, all that, we always had somebody who was a friend of the family that was in movies or a producer or on the academy. And so I remember getting like cassette tapes of movies or TV shows for like Golden Globes or Academy Awards before the awards were announced. So we like had that kind of vibe. There was always somebody who was on the cast of Lion King when it come the Broadway show.
Were these bootlegged? Like, you know, like
no,
from the back.
They would send cassette tapes of movies to people who were voters. So there's this whole thing. So we had friends who would watch the movies, then cast votes on best picture, cinematography, whatever it might be. And then they would send us.
Are they going to get in trouble for your divulging?
Probably. They're going to get kicked off of the academy. Sorry, everybody. Whoops. And so, you know, like in the Midwest, and I'm sure even, you know, for a sports bar like Cali Barbecue, you have March Madness brackets, which are about to kick off right now, right?
I love big March time. Madness.
I remember moving from California to Iowa, working in my uncle's restaurants, and all of a sudden I'm filling out brackets for college football, for college basketball, for the Masters, picking my team for the Masters. When I was growing up, we had brackets, but they were picking Oscar winners. And so my flex in my family on that side was always that I won like 3 years in a row when I was like 14, 15, and 16, something like that. So that's the level that we were into movies.
I'm a big bracket person, and I don't think I've heard of the Oscar bracket. So that's about as cool as
you can ever be in your life, filling out Oscar brackets.
Yeah, it sounds it.
So yeah, so when we, you know, reviewed the menu and did all that on this show, I wrote that review, which is on bestservedpodcast.com. You want to check out my review of the menu? Was the first movie review I've ever written in my life. So that was like a very apropos moment. I was like, wow, it took a fucking bizarro shitty movie like that to bring me full circle from something I grew up on. I mentioned we play charades. That's our family game. Like acting was something that was a big part of our life and movies. So there's your full circle story there.
I like it.
Yes, sir.
Wait, what's your favorite movie then?
Oh, that you can't ask that question. That is situational.
Oh my God, have you seen it? That meme about people say that they don't like The Godfather?
What?
Oh yeah.
Let's, come on. Sorry. I mean, I'll definitely say The Godfather 2 is better than 1, you know, because De Niro. Right?
So what if you're going to watch it tonight, you guys are going to stay and watch a movie. What are you popping on? Something new or something that you can?
Wow. Tarantino, one of my favorite filmmakers. I literally, the background movie that I have right now and one that's queued up on Netflix, Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs.
Mm, classic. Yeah.
And Reservoir Dogs might be my favorite movie.
I think I almost ended a friendship because one of my friends that has a popular podcast went off on Reservoir Dogs, and I was like, I don't even know if we can walk in the mornings anymore.
Dave,
Dave Pallet. I don't know you. Who are you?
Oh my God, that is definitely
Mr. Pink, man, right here. Or like Pulp Fiction. My favorite line in all of Pulp Fiction, which Quentin Tarantino is the most dialogue-driven director writer ever. I mean, the amount of dialogue like in Pulp Fiction between Vincent Vega, right, between Sam Jackson and John Travolta is just ridiculous. And my favorite line though is I'm Paul and that's between y'all, the bartender at the bar when Vincent Vega is staring down Bruce Willis, right? That whole scene, I'm Paul and that's between y'all. I'm like, brilliant. All of this amazing dialogue and that stupid ass line is the one that I'll always like quote. Anytime it gets awkward and somebody's like, well, what do you think? I'm Paul and that's between y'all. I'm out.
Yeah, that's
I got
a good
nothing
one.
To say.
I think I've even heard that.
There you go. I'm Paul. It's between y'all. Now you're going to start saying it. It's the best line. You got nothing else to say. All right. Let's get into our last segment, an at-large segment. We had lined up from talking last week that we were going to talk about, what was it, 9 things your server wished you'd stop doing at restaurants, from Food and Wine by Regan Stevens. But today you shared, yeah, we'll give a shout out to that article because I felt like that was a really good one. I think we might go in another direction. Kyle, this is your segment. Hmm. So you shared a Mr. Beast piece. You want to run with that?
So Mr. Beast asked his fans to, like, so he has those chocolate bars. I forget what they're called. Isn't it called like D's Nuts or something like that?
Well, that's the new line.
Yeah.
Yeah. Feastable is the name of his, like, that food line.
So he just basically put the word out to have his fans go clean up the displays at Walmart. I don't know, man. That's pretty genius.
Well, here was the article title in Fortune. Mr. Beast asks his fans to help clean up his chocolate bar displays in Walmart. And they're doing it. That's by Ariana Rosa Doyle. So they're doing it. What's the dynamic there? I saw a little bit of pushback against that, like asking people to do that and not paying them and stuff like that. I also saw people like, what a brilliant move. It's very Tom Sawyer getting people to paint the white fence. What's your thoughts on it?
Dude, but you know what? I think that people see this. They don't realize the power of the digital connections that most of the age of his fans have with those people. It's like us seeing, you know, for me, if I would have seen Bo Jackson walking down the street, now these kids have like, their person talking to them every night on their phone. It's real connection. So if he's like, hey, if you guys are in a Walmart, you just straighten up my display. Well, yeah, sure. Mr. Beast just asked me to do that. I'm going to do it for him. He's giving me so much. I think it seems like petty on the surface, or like he's asking a lot, like maybe just messing around, but I don't know. Maybe it started a joke and he tested it. Either way.
He's earned.
Of course he can, yeah.
Some of the ability to ask people to do stuff. Because we've all seen videos of him where he'll have one of his guys go into a Walmart and say, are you following Mr. Beast on social media, on YouTube, on TikTok, whatever it might be? And the first person says, yes, gets $10,000, gets a new car, something ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
The people now are like, I'm going to go clean off that Walmart because they might have me on camera and I'm going to go, you know, get to go in a room and be able to hold on to a suitcase for 24 hours and win $100,000. All of those things, he's proven that he can and is willing to do those things. So that's, you know, in the back of their mind, if not the level of respect they might have for the brand itself to then clean up a display. Cause we've seen those displays at Walmart. They're gross, man. They're beat the shit. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, anybody that's getting upset about Mr. Beast asking his fans to clean up a Walmart because they're underage, I think they're missing the point. You know, as humans, as a dad, one of the biggest rewards of my life was the day after Little League baseball. So my son had his first Little League game. We went, we had this incredible day. He had so much fun. The next day we wanted to go play catch at the park. So we went down to the park. And when we went to the park, my son goes, "Oh no." And I go, "What's wrong?" He goes, "There's trash everywhere." And it was from the community park where their Little League had opening day ceremonies. He's like, "But there's trash everywhere. This is a beautiful park." And like, he took it upon himself to get his sister to pick up all the trash before we played catch.
wait. He got his sister to do it.
No, so his sister's not very good at, he's much better at cleaning up, but she got involved too. So like literally they both and myself picked up the trash before we played catch. And like, that has nothing to do with Mr. Beast, but it has to do with picking up trash. Like, if somebody's going to get upset with Mr. Beast talking about or inspiring somebody to clean up the candy aisle, like maybe it inspires them to pick up the stuff that their parents aren't asking them to do, yeah, or their teachers or their coaches aren't asking them to do. Like, all of us need to be better. And if it happens to benefit Mr. Beast, so what? If they're picking up trash, if they're organizing something, that's great. And the fact that he has the power to do it is because he's earned the trust to ask those kids to do it.
We got baseball tryouts tomorrow, and I'm going to be like, "Go pick up trash, kid.
Get out there." I mean, he's doing that thing on, I saw this morning on TikTok, where he's walking on the people, or somebody is on campus, like, "Hey, if I give you $100, will you fly to Paris right now and pick me up again?" Did you see that? These kids are like, and then when he comes back, he's like, "Actually, you know what? Take this too." And he gives them like a huge stack of $100, like $20,000, like just cool. And then he just takes the bad guys. "You can keep the rest." I was like, that's insane. That's insane, right? Yep. Think about that type of reach. Wild.
Yeah, that's serious. That's why he's the next Disney or something. Is the ability to captivate people in that way is pretty unheard of. And Disney's, in my opinion, the greatest brand in history. When you think about what a brand is, their ability to connect generationally in all kinds of different mediums, to be complete disruptors of a space, you know, getting laughed out of the building to, you know, owning all the buildings. And it takes a level of like finding out what motivates people to do anything, I think is interesting. And if people are willing to do something like that, you know, I don't want the person that potentially is standing there now at that display like cleaning up nonstop because Mr. Beast told them to do it. But also you walk by that and you happen to remember that, hey, Mr. Beast is talking about, you know, keeping this display clean, and they pick up one piece of trash. Like, I don't have a problem with that. It doesn't seem so manipulative to me at this point.
This is even more interesting now that I think about it. What brand, including Disney, could make the same claim that they could get their fans to do that? Name one. No brand. But a person can. I think that's a huge differentiator.
Yeah.
Yeah, but for sure.
Disney's like, "Come over here and clean up our candy." People are like, "No shot, dude." Right? They're going to clean up the toy aisle for Disney.
Yeah, he's humanized his brand in a way that's very, very unique. Like, it's synonymous with him. But he's also done it in a way where he's replaceable too in his system. Like, he's got such a system where other people who have like amazing brands, personal brands, let's call them The Rock, for example, he isn't. Like, it has to be The Rock for it to be The Rock. But what Mr. Beast has done is he's created such levels of infrastructure and storytelling simultaneously that he is replaceable, which is why he's getting, you know, $1 billion offers and he's going, "Come on." Scoffing at $1 billion, which is ridiculous. All right, good show, guys. That was good. That was like an emotional roller coaster. There were some highs, there was some heavy stuff. I feel like that was a good vibe for sure. So everybody, as always, you saw the banners going by. Get onto restaurantideafactory.com. Sign up to be able to get updates of what we're doing, especially as we start to hit the road. So we want to know who's going to be in Chicago in May for the National Restaurant Association.
March 20th, if you're in Southern California, Kyle, myself, we will be at Spark LA for Toast. So send sign up and see you there, and we'll make some riff content together.
Why are you going, Jensen?
My California, my San Diego family is coming into town. I know. I was like, damn, I should have gone the other way.
Yeah.
Mom, sister, baby niece is coming in. So
yeah, riff on the road.
We got the Cali crew coming this way to hang out for spring break. So I'm missing out on this one, but we'll have some more. Yeah, get to us on social media at Restaurant Idea Factory. Been really, really inspired by a lot of the conversations happening there. Just saw quite a few restaurateurs hopping on and saying, I didn't know about Davo, signed up.
Yep.
I'm really excited to see what Ovation is doing with this call to text thing. I got a demo scheduled for Tuesday, like real-time action. Obviously, our guy Joshua Binning at Lucha Cantina in Rockford, Illinois has been the shiny star for what's going on with being able to apply some of the things that we're talking about. So get at us at Restaurant Idea Factory on any of the social media platforms. We will get at you. We will listen. We will respond. We'll get a segment on that you want to hear us talking about that's affecting you. So as always, let us know how we can do better. Any last words, guys?
I just shout out to Virgie. She was on Clubhouse and said she was listening to Restaurant Idea Factory. She initiated Davo, and we appreciate you for doing what you're doing. And anybody that wants to reach out to us, we're weirdly available, all three of us. Hit us up in the DMs and let us know about your restaurant.
We indeed are. And shout out to Sophie. Sophie, thanks for
not Sophie, one more time.
Buttons today. Appreciate you. All right, let's call it. Great show. Cheers.
Peace.
Subscribe to full episodes Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn.